Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Psychic Teachers. I'm your host, Deb Bowen.
And I'm Samantha Fay.
And we're just so delighted and honored that you have joined us tonight or whenever you're listening to this podcast. We thank you so much for being with us. If you're a regular listener to our show, you know that we have been working our way through the alphabet, and tonight we're on N. So our topic tonight is near-death experiences and stories. And before we get into that topic, Samantha has a stone of the week, and I have a winged person of the week for us. So, Samantha, it's all yours, dear.
Okay, great. So in honor of the letter N, brought to you by Kermit, I'm going to be talking about nebula stone. It's a recently new discovery, or at least it's a new stone that's just recently started appearing on the markets. It's generally black with green dots, and it's found in the southwestern United States and Mexico. It's composed of four minerals, and it is said to have unique metaphysical properties, which are still being explored. I'm reading here from the Crystal Bible. It is known to blend the vibration of light carried in its quartz component into the physical body, enlightening the cells and activating their consciousness. This raises over all conscious awareness, bringing remembrance of the soul's spiritual roots. Gazing into a nebula stone takes you outward into infinity and inward into the smallest particle of being. Ultimately, the two become one. This is a stone of non-duality and oneness. Nebula stone can bring about profound healing at the cellular level. It's recommended that you hold the stone in your hands or place it on your third eye for meditation. So that would be a good stone to work with if you're looking to raise your vibration.
It would.
Or if you needed to, sometimes when we have stalemates with people and we can't find any common ground with them, holding a nebula can help you to rise above the perceived differences and find that common ground.
Oh, good. Oh, that sounds neat. Spell it and let me put it in the chat room for you.
Oh, I'll do it while you talk. Go
ahead. Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. So the animal I picked for tonight, in keeping with our N theme, is a little bird that I bet most folks know about and don't pay a doggone bit of attention to it because it's forever around your house. It's called a nuthatch. One word, N-U-T-H-A-T-C-H. And according to a beautiful write-up by Ted Andrews, he says that nuthatches remind us to be grounded in faith and in higher wisdom. And this little bird, you've seen it. It's the little bird that kind of hangs around the rafters of your house, you know, like kind of under the eaves of your house.
Mm-hmm.
And you often see it kind of looking upside down, which is the way it descends down a tree. It always comes down head first. And it's...
On the pictures I'm looking at, it almost looks like a tiny bluebird.
Yeah, it's not...
With black markings.
It's not quite as blue as a bluebird.
So it's more like a grayish? Like
and they're about the size of a wren. They're not very big at all.
Yeah, they're cute as anything.
Yeah, I know, they're precious. They really are. And I thought you might find this interesting, and certainly our listeners will. A number of psychics, I'm quoting from Ted Andrews, a number of psychics and healers I have encountered over the years use nuthatch as a totem. Because we become so lost in our spiritual and ethereal realms that sometimes we have difficulty in the real world. They are sometimes out of touch. And so nuthatches remind us to be grounded, to be centered, to be focused, and to balance that mind-body-spirit connection. Interestingly, nuthatches are traveling companions to the woodpecker. And as new rhythms are sounded out by the woodpecker, the nuthatch works to bring the woodpecker down out of the ethereal realms and ground them into physical life. Isn't that interesting?
That is.
And let's see what else he says here. So the nuthatch teaches us not to have blind faith, but it teaches us that one who speaks the truth is not necessarily the truth itself. It teaches us that one who points at the sun is not the sun. Rather, it teaches proper strength and action through faith in yourself.
That is fascinating.
I know.
We'll all have to look out for the little nut hedges in our
Yeah, I'm sure you have them around your house, because I certainly do, and they're just wonderful little birds. They don't ever hurt anything. They're just precious.
Well, thank you. So tonight we're talking about near-death experiences, which is a topic that has fascinated me for as long as I can remember. I remember reading Embraced by the Light and the other one that came, I feel like they both came out around the same time. Danielle Brinkley's was Embraced by the Light, and then Betty Eady's was...
No, she was Embraced by the
Light.
She
was Embraced by the Light, and then Danielle Brinkley's was In the Light? I'll have to look
something,
up.
Something by the Light.
But I read both of those, and ever since I've been hooked on any story I can get about near-death experiences, because to me, it's proof that there really is something waiting for us when we die. And I find that very comforting.
Oh, I do too, absolutely. And, you know, in doing some
Saved
research...
Saved by the Light, sorry. The book I was referring to is Saved by the Light.
Danielle Brinkley's little book. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Near-death experiences have some commonalities across gender,
mm-hmm.
across culture,
mm-hmm.
across belief, across age. It's a fascinating thing that it's spoken of so similarly. And I did some research into near-death experiences by people who were attempting suicide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I want to talk more about that in a little bit.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what a gift that experience was for them.
Right.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that.
Well,
so,
you know, what I think is interesting is if you look at the Tibetan Book for the Dead mm-hmm. or the Egyptian Book of the Dead,
uh-huh.
they are both manuals on what will happen to you when you die.
Yes.
And I was listening to a researcher who studied both of those books in their original languages, and he was saying this information probably came to the authors through near-death experiences.
Probably. I mean, yes, you know, through either their own or certainly through talking to people who had experienced that, you
mm-hmm.
know. Right.
All right, so let's talk about the general patterns of what happens when people have a near-death experience.
Okay, and then we'll go into more detail. So, great. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
So, oh, you want me to do that?
No, I'll do it. It's fine. So, most people report seeing a white light, but not everyone does. Dr. Eben Alexander, who is famous for writing Proof of Heaven a couple of years ago, he actually went into what he calls the earthworm or the earth hole experience, where he was surrounded by dark and dirt for a long time. Some people say that I think Anita Diamante in Dying to Live is
mm-hmm.
I think the name of her book,
mm-hmm.
Or Dying to Be Me. She was just kind of there. You know, like here one minute and there another. So you read a lot of occasions of that. When I've done readings, a couple of people have shown me them on boats and getting, like literally canoeing to the other side.
Oh, interesting.
And I read a couple of stories, you know, of people that did meet the other side through water.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have near-death experiences where... it's kind of like a white light, but it's more like an opening, like a portal opening, and they see their loved ones through the portal,
mm-hmm.
and the loved ones kind of pull them through. In any case, the majority do see the white light, and a lot of research has been done, you know, do we see the white light because we're kind of now been told to expect that, or do we see a white light because that's really what is happening?
Right.
Of course, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But people who have seen the bright light say it's brighter than any light you can imagine. It is warmer in a comforting way than anything you can imagine, and that the light seems to be vibrating or humming with an energy of love and peace. And the light itself is often described as a tunnel because it feels as though the pulsating energy is pushing you through.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe what's really happening is it is pushing you through this portal into another dimension.
Although in some cultures and places where there are not tunnels, people don't have that image because they're not familiar with the concept.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're going to talk in a minute. Wait a minute. Somebody's commented in the chat room about scientists and chemical reactions. We're going to get to the other side of all of this in just a few minutes, so hang in there with us. Go ahead.
Some people claim that when they get to the other side, they are met by loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Some are met by what they call angels. Some are met by what they call spiritual beings. Some say they saw Jesus and spoke with him, spent some time with him. So it's not always a family.
Some are met by their pets.
Yes, yes. And usually what happens, and there's many different types, like a near-death experience, for example, if I was reading a story about a sous chef who choked on a piece of meat that he was cooking, and he left his body and floated above it and watched the paramedics work on him and then went back into his body. That's considered a near-death experience. He didn't go to a white light. He didn't see anybody. He wasn't told anything. But he did leave his body. So I just think it's important to note that. But very often what will happen is sometimes, like in Danyon Brinkley's case, for example, you are given a life review. So you are shown, you know, your life and what you did and what you didn't do.
And he was struck by lightning.
Yeah, while talking on the phone.
Ooh, yeah.
And he was not, in his words, he was not a nice man. He was a very mean man. And when he was shown the effects of his cruelty on the people around him, it forever changed his life. So oftentimes you'll have the life review. Sometimes you'll just have a conversation with spiritual beings. I remember in Dr. George Ritchie's book, Return from Tomorrow, Jesus just said to him, "What have you done for me?" And George says, "Well, I'm fighting in World War II. That's kind of for you." And he said, "No, that's for your country." And Dr. Ritchie said, "Well, I'm in med school. That's pretty good." And he says, "No, that's for your ego." And he couldn't think of one thing he had ever done in the name of Christ. And it was really eye-opening to him.
Absolutely. I have your copy of that book sitting here in front of me as we're talking.
Okay. Such a good read.
It's a great book.
And then you are either told you have to go back, or you're given the option. And from the stories, many stories I've read, most people are told they have to go back, and they don't. Never have I read anyone that was like, okay. Most of them do not want to go back, because over there the feeling of peace and love and acceptance is so fluid in every breath and every thought, everywhere around you, that they don't want to leave that beautiful energy and come back to the harsh, cruel world we live in called Earth. Mm-hmm. So most of them fight it, but they are told, you know, that you do have to go back. And very often, some of the lucky ones are told why. You know, I mean, there was a story of a mother who died for 4 minutes while giving birth, and she was like, "No, I don't want to go back." And they were like, "No, this child came to Earth to be raised by you, and you have a very special purpose in raising this child." And it turned out that that child had, I think it was, what's that called, junior diabetes? What's it called when you
juvenile
get...
Juvenile diabetes.
Juvenile diabetes, and the mother ended up, like, starting this charity and raising a lot of money for juvenile diabetes.
Right.
So sometimes you're told why you have to come back. Sometimes you're not told. You're just told you got to go.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I've often wondered why some folks have near-death experiences and why some folks come near death and don't have near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly don't have an answer to that. But I it seems to me that in what I have read is that often when that occurs, there's a really big particular lesson that needs to be learned as a result of having had that experience.
I agree. You know, my husband died twice on the table with the night he was shot, for several minutes each time. And I remember when he survived, but he was in a coma, I remember thinking, I cannot wait to ask him what he saw when he wakes up. Like one of my main thoughts the whole month. And when he woke up, he said he remembered nothing.
Oh.
But he Later on, when all the ICU meds had worn off, he remembered dancing with a little girl. And he later came to believe that was Chloe, who I was pregnant with.
Right.
But, you know, so I don't know. I think everybody who dies for a certain amount of time probably does have a near-death experience, but I don't think everybody remembers it consciously.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I mean, and I'm not convinced that everybody has the experience either.
Well, the only reason why I say that is because every time I do a reading for someone who has died tragically or suddenly, they always show me their body, their soul being pulled out of their body at the second of impact or the second of the heart attack. And they're always adamant to report that they did not feel pain.
Yes. Yes.
And if you read near-death experiencers who have had a tragedy, like who have had a shooting or a drowning or like a choke, you know, something that's very, very painful, they will say that they had no pain, and then they go back into their body and they're riddled with pain.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Once they get back into that, into the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But while they're out of it, they don't feel that pain. They just don't.
The other thing I find interesting is that all races and genders and religions, as you said, have near-death experiences. But what I also research is that several people who are devout atheists have had near-death experiences.
Yes.
Which I find fascinating.
Who do they see?
Usually they will just see what they call beings of light.
Mm-hmm.
Or they will just feel a presence and see a light.
Right. And you know, there was a comment in the chat room earlier that I wanted to come back to. Yes, there is lots of research that refutes this idea that it all has to do with brain chemistry or medications or, you know, some kind of explainable medical reason for this. I think my personal view of that is that because the circumstances and situation are so varied, and the potential medications, the brain state, the body state is so varied, that that doesn't give me enough credence for that. I have to believe in near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I just do. And I think, interestingly, one of the there's a wonderful organization that I've been doing some research on, and it's, let me get the name right for everybody. It's the International Association for Near-Death Studies. International Association for Near-Death Studies, with a very impressive board of directors, I have to say. So they list on their website that here are some common features, regardless of the diversity of the people. Often there's intense emotions, as you've mentioned, profound peace, love. Others, however, are marked by fear, horror, or loss. There is a perception of seeing one's body from above. That's now called an out-of-body experience. Sometimes watching resuscitation efforts, you know, they can see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
The rapid movement through darkness and often towards an indescribable light. A sense of being somewhere else in a landscape that may seem like spiritual, a spiritual realm. Incredibly rapid, sharp thinking and observations, very, very acutely aware. Encounter with deceased loved ones, sacred figures like Jesus, unrecognized beings with whom communication is mind to mind, a life review, in some cases a flood of knowledge about life and the nature of the universe, and sometimes a decision to return to the body, or certainly an indication that they have to come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sometimes what I've read in stories is there's like a threshold. There was a story where a grandfather met his granddaughter. She had a near-death experience during a surgery, and she was running toward him, and he said, no, you can't go any further, or you can't go back.
Uh-huh.
And she stopped, and then they kind of talked over this chasm. I want to say one thing about all the scientific stuff, and someone had a really good question about the ayahuasca drug that you can take. A lot of the shamans will take this drug, and it's becoming so popular that a lot of people are actually traveling, leaving the country, and going to have this experience, which I don't know about, because someone just died doing that like 6 months ago. So I think you'd have to thoroughly research it. But anyway, if you do take ayahuasca, and I think I'm saying it a little wrong, so I apologize. Ayahuasca, that's it. If you do take ayahuasca, it does give you sometimes visions of the afterlife. And I don't believe that these are hallucinations. What I believe that there are drugs that can help us to leave this dimension and go to a higher dimension. It's kind of like when you have drank too much and you lose your inhibition. I think there are certain drugs that help you to lose whatever ropes keep us tied here. I'm not saying I think that's good or bad. I just think that's a fact, in my opinion. So I guess I can't call it a fact. But I think that's just what happens. And then those pilots, do you remember that, where they would simulate a very erratic flying experience where they're spinning in circles and they passed out and had near-death visions?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of atheists have used that to say, ha-ha, see, there's no afterlife. Well, again, I don't think that disproves the afterlife. I think that if you pass out, you can leave this dimension. Every psychic and medium agrees that the other side is here. It's right here with us. It's just a lighter level. And we have to be able to raise our vibrations. Some psychics and most mediums can do that. Many children can do that. And I think there are certain instruments, like that spinny chair the pilots sit in and the ayahuasca that the shamans drink, that can also help us do that. But it's all about leaving this dimension. And I don't think you just have to die to leave this dimension. I think there are other ways there.
Mm, I agree. I think that's true. one of the things that I found fascinating was with studies with people who had near-death experiences after attempting suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And were told, in all of the cases I read about, they were told, you have to go back. You have more to do. The world needs you.
Mm-hmm.
And those near-death experiences were literally life-changing to those people. And statistically, far fewer of them attempted a second suicide because they had that hope, that belief, that they had things to do
mm-hmm.
here.
You know, there's a really nice story similar to that of an atheist named Ian McCormick, and he did not believe in anything. And he died, and he saw two things. He saw hell, and then he saw heaven. And he says he saw Jesus. I don't think he was raised with any religion, least of all Christianity. I believe he's from New Zealand. Anyway, and Jesus said, you know, you have a choice. You can be a good person and go to heaven, or you can continue to make wrong choices and go to the lower levels. And he said, no, I choose to be good. And it's changed his life completely. He is now a missionary, and he's written a story, and he refuses to have it published or copyrighted. It's free for anybody to download and read.
Hmm.
Yeah, you just have to Google Ian McCormick.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. There's also the story of Howard Storm. Have you ever seen his story?
Yes.
Yeah. He was an atheist, not the nicest man. I don't think his kids still speak to him, but I could be wrong about that. I could be wrong, so I shouldn't say that on a live radio show. I apologize. But I just know that everyone did say he wasn't the nicest guy. And he was an arts professor, and he had taken a group of students over to France with his wife to look at museums. And he had something that's kind of like an appendicitis attack, but more severe. And I don't know if you know this, but in Europe, like, everyone takes off in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, like, one doctor at this hospital in France. And anyway, he had to wait, like, days for treatment. It was crazy. And he died. for several minutes, and he saw all these people that were like, come on, come on, come on, follow us, come on. So he thought like someone, like these were patients saying like, hey, we found a doctor, come on, follow us. So he gets out of bed and he turns around and he sees himself lying in the bed, but he was like, no, I'm just hallucinating, they've got me on too many drugs or something. So he just walked down the hallway and followed them, and suddenly he was in this really dark dungeon-y-like room, and there were all these beings that were trying to bite him, and they were spitting at him, and they smelled so foul, and they were swearing curse words at him, and he said he was just filled with hate and shame and guilt and venom, and everyone was being so violent, and he couldn't remember a single prayer that he had been taught as a child, because he'd been an atheist for so long. And finally, he was like reaching out to something better and nicer than these awful people. And he remembered that song, Yes, Jesus Loves Me. And he started to sing that. And this white light pierced through the darkness of that room. And Jesus' hand reached down and pulled him out of there. And he did his life review and, you know, saw all of that. And he came back to earth, as Jesus said he would, and completely healed. And he quit his job as a professor and became a pastor of an Episcopalian church.
Isn't that interesting?
Changed his life.
But you know, I mean, I don't want to in any way indicate that atheists are bad people or that they don't have some kind of connection to the notion of something else. So they do, you know. Mm-hmm. I know people who claim not to believe in anything, and yet they are nice and kind and gentle and wonderful people.
Yes.
So I think that's important to note as
well. I think
well.
That's very important to note, yes. We have friends who are atheists and are wonderful people.
We certainly do. Absolutely.
And we have friends who are Christian and aren't wonderful people and are wonderful people. You know what I mean? Like, there's all kinds in every different...
Yeah.
Belief or non-belief system.
What I do think is interesting is that whatever the person's belief system is, that seems to be at least their introductory experience on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Buddhist people see Buddha.
Okay, I have not found a story of that.
It's on that wonderful website I just quoted you. That.
Okay, because I wanted people to send me stories. Every story I read, they see... Christ or angelic beings, and I wanted somebody, like, does anyone see Ganesh? I'd love to hear someone talk about, like, this elephant man ran towards me. Like, I'd love to hear stories of, you know, different things like that.
Uh-huh, right, exactly.
Is there stories of that on that website?
I did not see that.
Okay.
I did not see that, but I, you know.
What's it called again?
Let me pull it up for you. It's the International Association for Near-Death Studies.
Okay.
The web address is IANDS.org.
IANDS.org. Oh, while we're talking about stuff like this, we should talk about some authors people might want to read.
Oh, absolutely. Raymond Moody.
Raymond Moody is the... one of the first to really start researching and talking about this. He was a med student in class, and his teacher was Dr. George Ritchie, who wrote the book Return from Tomorrow that I talked about before. And Dr. George Ritchie would always tell his freshman med students this story because he really wanted them to constantly stay connected to their purpose and not just, you know, states too much in the scientific mind. And Dr. Raymond Moody was so blown away by his story. He actually has a PhD and an MD. Can you imagine being that smart?
No.
and he has since devoted his life to studying near-death experiences. I recommend that you all check out all of his books. Life After Life, of course, is his most famous. Glimpses of Eternity is wonderful. It's stories of people who are by the bedside of a dying person and have a near-death experience with that dying person.
Mm-hmm.
And then his biography, I highly recommend that people read. Dr. Raymond Moody he's obviously still alive. is a very spiritual man. I mean, I think anyone who studies near-death experiences comes away from it changed and comes away from it very, very invested in spirituality. And he had a couple of bad years, not too very long ago, went through a bad divorce and lost most of his money and then had a very painful illness, and he was attempting suicide. And he writes about all of that very honestly in his biography. So I definitely recommend you all check it out, because it's just, he's so honest and vulnerable in all of his writings. Another person who has done so much research on near-death experiences is PMH Atwater. And I think you'll find her books very interesting. There's, I left it downstairs. Because there's the book that Mary recommended to us that I have. It's Glimpses of Heaven.
Yes.
Glimpses of Heaven. That's a really good book.
And then there's another book called Glimpsing Heaven. Glimpsing Heaven.
Maybe that's...
But maybe this is the one you're talking. We're talking about the same book. Glimpsing Heaven by Judy Bockrock.
That's it.
Okay. And Rocky Mountain Guy has just posted in here. She shared some wonderful NDE stories in her book. She also comes from a perspective that there are many more people who've experienced NDEs today as a result of the inducement of clinical death.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of all like those stories of the young babies sent to the morgue in like India and like other countries, and they wake up?
Yes. Or the mother who is delivering a stillborn baby, and that she insists on holding it, and the baby lives.
Isn't that I know, those give me chills.
I know, me too.
I think it's Dr. Melvin Morse who studied childhood NDEs.
Mm-hmm.
Children who have NDEs. He has some type of strange recent history, so I'm not necessarily recommending him. But childhood, children who have NDEs, I think their stories are absolutely fascinating, because they don't tend to make things up. However, Malarkey, the kid who wrote the book, The Boy Who Went to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I started, seriously, Deb, I'm not kidding. This is when I started looking at people's last names, because I heard the boy and the father being interviewed. I think it was on Darkness Radio when the book first came out. And I'm listening. They were very nice people. And I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking, something's not jiving here. I feel like this is malarkey. And then I realized that was their last name.
Oh.
And then I don't know if you read that the boy came out this year and said he made it all up.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Let's stop there. We're past the halfway mark, and we've got to talk about some stuff.
I just want to say, like, that breaks my heart when people do make this stuff up, because it gives the non-believers so much ammunition, and it gives the people walking that line of doubt more doubt.
Right.
So I find it heartbreaking when people lie about that. But last names don't lie. Bernie Madoff.
I just have to tell you that many years ago, there was a physician in our town whose last name was Unsicker. Isn't that great? That was his last name.
Great. He made you Unsicker.
Yeah, and there's a doctor in town now whose last name is Dr. Payne.
Oh, is it P-A-Y-N-E?
It is,
okay,
but you know, it's still pronounced Payne.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I know. Anyway. Okay, so let's take a break and tell folks about our wonderful sponsors and then about some of the things that we do as well. So let me tell everybody about Peaches. Peaches Gifts would like to thank everyone who registered and attended the doTERRA Essential Oils webinar. Your support was greatly appreciated, and we hope you learned more about essential oils. We invite you to visit our store for all our craft supplies, and don't forget, we now carry essential oils. Just click on the doTERRA Essential Oils tab when you visit us at www.peachesgifts.com. Use the coupon code PSYCHICTEACHERS to get 15% off your entire order. So go take a look at all the great stuff at Peaches Gifts. It's a wonderful website, great supplies for scrapbooking and artwork, and now doTERRA oils as well. So how could you possibly go wrong? It's a great place. Go visit Peaches Gifts. I'll put that in the chat room.
And 15% off. You can't.
And 15% off. You know, isn't that great?
And we're also sponsored by Audible. If you go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers, you will get a free 1 month trial. If you're already a member of Audible through us, thank you so much for your support. And I wanted to tell you that they're running a really cool sale this week. All of the great courses are like $6.95.
Mm.
But for those of you who are new to Audible, check them out. Go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers. You'll get a free 1 month preview. And some of the books I'm recommending tonight are The Day I Died, 10 Remarkable True Stories of Near-Death Experience by Tammy Cohen. There's PMH Atwater, who I recommended before. Her book is Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story, What They Teach Us About Living and Dying and Our True Purpose. And then there's one that I thought would be interesting. Now, I haven't read it, so I'm not exactly sure, but it's called Near Death and Out-of-Body Experiences of the Prophets, Saints, Mystics, and Sages in World Religions.
I haven't read that either.
Doesn't that sound neat? That's by Marilyn Hughes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And they also have Proof of Heaven by Dr. Eben Alexander, which I was just talking about on here, and lots of other good things.
Okay. So Peaches Gifts and Audible Trial, thank you both so much for sponsoring Psychic Teachers. We appreciate it. Also, please take a look at Samantha's website and at my website. We offer readings and coaching together and separately. We have wonderful downloadable courses that folks tell us they really enjoy learning from us, and lots of other items on Samantha's website as well. So please go take a look at our websites and go through them. And
I have two things I want to say about that.
Okay.
One, on my website, SamanthaFey.com, F-E-Y, my CDs are buy one, get one free this month. So if you just buy the Spirit Guide CD, you'll get the Chakra Clearing one. If you buy the Chakra Clearing one, I'll put the Spirit Guide one in the mail so you don't have to worry about which one you click. And the other thing is, I've been creating, if you guys are familiar with my chakra bags, where I, you know, just knit a bag in the colors of the chakras and then put the stones in it. I've been making those chakra bags, but much bigger to hold tarot or oracle cards. And once again, I cannot come up with a name. Someone has already copyrighted Tarot Totes. It's a really cute website, and they have really cute bags, I should say. So I don't know what to call them. I don't know if I want Tarot in the name because I want them, like I use them for all of my cards. So if you come up with a name, post it on Facebook, our Psychic Teachers Facebook page, and once again, the winner will get a free Chakra Tarot Oracle Card Tote Bag.
Oh, nice. There you go. Wonderful. And from me, one more little quick note here. Tonight is the full moon, so remember to charge your crystals and send up gratitude to Grandmother Moon. That's what we do at full moon is give thanks. And keep in mind that I have a How to Work with Moon Energy downloadable course on my website. So if that resonates for you, please check it out.
Yay.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about some of the after effects of near-death experiences.
Okay, good.
Because I find that almost as fascinating as the near-death experience themselves.
Because of how it changes people's lives.
Yes. Okay, so here's an example, and this is from the same website you were talking about before, IANDS.
Mm-hmm.
They say around 80% of the people who experience near-death states claim that their lives were forever changed by what happened to them. On closer examination, though, a pattern of surprising dimensions emerged. Experiencers were not returning with just a renewed zest for life and a more spiritual outlook. They were evidencing specific psychological and physiological differences on a scale never before faced by them. And this was true with child experiencers as well as with teenagers and adults. Various researchers have attempted to profile these changes over the years. even without the necessary funding to do clinical studies, most feel that enough research has been done to justify acknowledging these after-effect patterns and making the information available. The patterns can be understood if we look at them separately. So they tend to come to love and accept others without the usual attachments and conditions society expects. They perceive themselves as equally and fully loving of each and all, openly generous, excited about the potential and wonder of each person they see. Their desire is to be a conduit of universal love. Confused family members tend to regard this sudden switch as oddly threatening. And that's something I came across too, Deb. A lot of divorces result.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, a lot of, like, Danyon Brinkley, for example, pops into my mind.
Yeah.
But a lot of them come back so changed their spouses can't handle it. And I think that's because like attracts like. So we marry someone who's like us, but then we change, you know, fundamentally after this experience, and then they're like, who is this person?
And sometimes people don't believe us. You know, that it's a lot of doubt.
Yeah.
From people's spouses and families about what they've experienced, you know?
That would be hard for me if someone doubted my experience, you know, because
yeah.
I would imagine it would be so special. The experiencer now has a basis of comparison unknown before. Familiar codes of conduct can lose relevance or disappear altogether as new interests take a priority. So it looks as though they leave behind expectations,
mm-hmm.
you know, from family, from society, from culture, from religion.
Because life and every day in life has a brand new meaning,
mm-hmm.
and what might have been within their value system previously may be gone, and
yeah.
new things take their place.
This next one makes me envious. Most experiencers develop a sense of timelessness. They tend to flow with the natural shift of light and dark and display a more heightened awareness of the present moment and the importance of being in the now. Making future preparations can seem irrelevant to them. They are often labeled spacey by others, although seldom... Hold on. Oh, but that's because many experiences refer to their episodes as if it were a type of divider separating their former life from the present one.
Uh-huh.
So they learn to live in the present moment in a much more real way, which I find wonderful.
I try that.
I do too. And I think that's important that we keep trying.
It is important that we keep trying. I've been doing a ton of yard work and gardening and planting over the past week or so. And I found that when I'm out there with my hands in the dirt, I'm in the moment.
Yes.
You know, I don't,
yeah.
It's when I come in to take a break and get something to drink and wash my hands and think, oh, you know, I really should be doing such and such. No, I got to go back out and work on these tomatoes some more.
We actually went to the pool today.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. It was freezing.
Oh, I bet.
And we came home around 4, and I said to the girls, you guys go inside and change up. I'm going to plant, because we went to the strawberry farms this morning, and I bought a lot of plants. And my oldest came out and said, Mom, I'm really hungry. Are you going to make dinner? And I was like, it's 4 o'clock. She said, it's 6:30.
No.
I was out there for 2.5 hours and had no clue.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that is a really good way to experience timelessness. I also, and I know you do too, I experience that timelessness when I'm writing.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I can start to write something in the evening, and it's gotten worse now that my schedule is more flexible, and I'll look up and it's 1:45 in the morning. Where did
yeah.
that go? You
and
know?
That's such a neat feeling.
Yeah, it is.
The other effect of an NDE is that they often come back quite psychic.
Yes.
They are much more tuned in to clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience. They have out-of-body episodes. They will often be able to tell the future. They will finish other people's sentences. Some claim to hear plants and animals speak. They also see beings from the other side.
Mm-hmm. And they see with those colors that we talk about on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
They see the vibration, the color vibrations.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is so neat. Forgiveness tends to take a very huge precedence in their lives. Hard-driving achievers and materialists can transform into easygoing philosophers after an NDA. However, uncommitted people before the experience now become more energetic and determined to make a difference in the world. So, and again, a lot of this talks about how the family and friends have such a hard time dealing with some of these changes. So I do think if someone listening to this has had an NDE, luckily, I feel like today the fear is gone from sharing it, you know? And a lot of the books I've read of stories, there's a lot of, like, a lot of men from World War II had NDEs over there,
right,
and didn't share them until their deathbed because they were embarrassed. And I think in the cultural environment that, say, someone of my generation or, you know, beyond me grew up with, it's almost confusing for us. Why would you be embarrassed by that? But that was their culture. That was their belief. It was strange. You were crazy. And so I do think it's lovely that we don't have that stigma anymore. But I do think if someone listening has had an NDE, I think it is so important to try to find a therapist that you can talk to, or at least to contact one of these wonderful research institutes and, you know, see what help they can offer.
Mm, absolutely. You know, because I'm sure that it feels pretty lonely and scary,
mm-hmm,
when, you know, you're the only one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you know. I mean, you don't, a lot of folks don't know somebody else who's had that experience. You know, I know I have a lot of friends and family members who have had really lovely, fascinating experiences in the dying process.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I know anybody personally who's had a near-death experience.
I don't believe I do either.
I mean, we've had those kind of conversations with clients,
mm-hmm,
but in my immediate circle of friends and family, I don't know of anybody who's had that.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, I think my husband will be the closest, but that's not a typical one, you know? So, yeah. Let's hope we don't, though, because I don't want to think about what will lead up to that.
No, I don't either.
Some of the physiological after effects include sensitivity to light and sound and smells, which I find so interesting because, like it says, for example, many can no longer tolerate hard rock music. This is what I find interesting, if we could bring it back to me for a minute.
Well, certainly.
When I was really opening up my abilities, my sensitivities to light and sound and smell, I can't tell you, and the smell to this day is the hardest for me. If someone is wearing perfume around me, I just swallow it. It's in my throat. Like my girls call it my superhero power because I can smell anything. It's weird. And the hard rock music, I mean, I'm sure you remember how much I loved rap music and hard rock music. I mean, I never, in high school and college, we would blare AC/DC for hours while getting ready.
Ooh, dear. Okay.
And now I can't, like, I'm all classical and jazz and, you know, Mumford and Sons, all, you know what I mean? But that's about as crazy as I get.
I put on, I was really wanting to hear, I've been really lost in the British Isles over the past few days because I'm coming up on the anniversary time of my trip over there last year. And so I was listening to the Chieftains and some other folks, and I love folks like the Chieftains.
I do, too.
And, you know, the Irish Rovers and those guys. But I ended up switching to an album that's kind of a compilation CD, and it's called Celtic Inspirations, and it's kind of soft, tinkly harp music. Get me over there, but it was a lot softer, you know. And, you know, you're talking to an old deadhead, so, you know, you can see how that goes, you know.
And the other thing they experience are energy surges, kind of like what we were talking about with the Kundalini rising.
Right, that they feel electrical current through their bodies.
Mm-hmm. They'll have electrical sensitivity, so watches can stop, microphones squeal, tape recorders quit, television channels change, the light bulbs pop. Again, if we could bring this back to me. But all of that happens around me, and I know it happens around you, too.
I haven't worn a watch in many, many years.
I haven't either.
Couldn't do it.
And the television will turn off around me a lot.
Mm-hmm. I have flickering lights. I don't have a TV, but I have flickering lights in my house. Sometimes.
And the light bulbs pop around me a lot.
Mm-hmm. These newer ones, the swirly ones, mm-hmm. do better.
Yeah, they do.
Uh-huh.
The healthy environmental ones, yeah.
Right.
And they'll have physical differences as well. Many say it's almost as if they have to relearn how to use their own body and brain. Once adjustments are made, the majority come to live healthy, productive lives and are happier, more spiritually oriented and energetic than before. If they deny or repress the after effects, it seems to leave the individuals feeling somehow incomplete and can foster unwanted breakthroughs later.
Interesting.
So I find it interesting that many of the after effects are very similar to what I believe people who awaken to their own intuition experience.
I think they are. And, you know, as you were talking a while ago about people with near-death experiences in war, and you take the suppression of that experience and couple it with the post-traumatic stress that goes with having been in war, and I think that's a very damaging combination to a lot of people. And there may never have been any accounting for that near-death experience in any attempt to treat the post-traumatic disorder.
Oh, wow.
Had you thought about that?
No.
I had not until just now.
I had not.
As we were talking.
No.
I hadn't either.
Wow, that's really interesting.
It would be. Wouldn't it be interesting if, I mean, you know, wouldn't it be interesting, and I knew this would never happen, but wouldn't it be interesting if the Bureau of Veterans Affairs did some studies on this and they were working with people with PTSD?
It would be wonderful. You know, there's that doctor, I was trying to find it on the internet and I couldn't, so if anyone finds it, please post it on our Facebook page. Because there's a doctor, he's been on Nightline and 60 Minutes, and he's been on the news. And I believe he's a heart doctor, and so he loses a lot of patients temporarily. I don't mean to laugh, I don't know why I laughed. A little punchy tonight. But he'll lose a lot of patients on the table that he's working on, and then he'll bring them back. And many of them report either out-of-body experiences or near-death experiences. And he was having kind of a hard time grasping that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he put a quarter on top of this machine that almost reaches up to the ceiling. And he's doing a study on how many people see the quarter.
Oh.
As they rise out of their body.
Uh-huh.
Remember that woman who had the NDE and she said there was an old sneaker on top of the hospital roof?
Yes.
And nobody believed her, and then someone went on the roof and found the sneaker.
Right. I remember that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So things like that are physical, literal proof.
Uh-huh.
That consciousness does survive, whether the brain is alive or not. So our consciousness is something outside of our brain, which is fascinating to me.
Well, it is fascinating, and the whole notion that we don't just think with our brains. There's a wonderful woman who is a researcher for the National Institute of Health. Her name is Candace Perk, and she several years ago wrote a book entitled The Molecules of Emotion. She won the Nobel Prize for her research in pain receptors and opiate receptors in our bodies, and she proved that the opiate receptors are throughout our bodies, not just within our brain. And so if that is true, then there are other functions that we think of as being brain functions that are also found in other areas of our bodies.
Wow.
It's a fascinating study.
It kind of hurts my head to think about.
Well, but it might hurt your knee because you might have some...
I know. That's crazy. Okay, that's really cool.
It is cool.
Oh, wow. Okay, so someone has just put in the chat room, my grandfather died during heart surgery and said the Blessed Mother sent him back because his work on earth wasn't finished yet.
What a gift.
Oh, that's so cool.
It is.
I hope the Blessed Mother's there for me when I go.
She will be because you want to see her so badly, I believe that.
I do want to see her so badly.
I know.
And Jerome said his best friend Anita had an NDE, and she's now one of the kindest, most loving people he knows.
And very connected to the world of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how that could not change you.
Yeah,
whether you experience it and say, you know, gosh, I've been given a gift to come back and do some things differently and wonderfully in my life, or whether you're one of those folks who denies that it happened, and yet at some level you know that something did, you know. Mm-hmm. You've got to come back from that and experience in some way different, you know. You just do.
I agree. Well, and I think, too, to know that you have a purpose. I think a lot of people don't have the comfort and the validation of knowing that they have a purpose. Don't you agree?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, why am I here? What am I doing? And I think it would be, and I know you and I are lucky in that we feel our work is such a part of our purpose. But I still would love it if someone said, like, you know, you've got a lot to do. Go on back. Like, I just think that would be very comforting.
Well, I think it would be comforting, but you and I bet many, many, many of our listeners believe they have a purpose for being here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I hope so, because I know that we all have one main purpose, but I also know that we have several other purposes as well.
Yeah, and you know, and you and I, as we do readings for people, and we talk about their life purposes, a lot of times I think that our clients think, well, gosh, those are pretty mundane purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they were expecting something bigger. But I would say that that our life purposes are sometimes, they are seemingly mundane, and yet we make such a huge difference to other people. I remember asking my father once what he wanted people to say about him when he was dead. And he said, I want people to say I was kind.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the kindest, most wonderful people to have ever walked this earth. And I learned so much about kindnesses that he had done for people all my life that I had no idea he had ever done.
Well, have you all seen that commercial? It's an Asian commercial, so it's subtitled, but it goes around Facebook periodically. It's beautiful if you get a chance to see it. It's about this man, and he wakes up, and every day there's this, like, water draining from this building, and he collects the water, and he waters this plant that's been neglected.
Mm-hmm.
And then he helps this woman, like, pushing this cart across the street.
Oh, I love that. I've seen it on Facebook.
Have you seen it? And then, like,
mm-hmm.
the little girl begging with her mom, and he always gives her money. And it just shows that he does this every single day.
And the little girl ends up going to school, and he has
money
for
the flower blossoms.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful, and it reminds us that, you know, we do live our purpose every day. It might look mundane, watering a flower and giving to a beggar, but it's not mundane to that flower or to that beggar.
That's right.
It's kind of like the starfish story. You know, it mattered to that one.
That's right. Yeah, I love that story. But, you know, it may be, I mean, as I was thinking about our show tonight, and I was thinking about all the fascinating aspects of all of this, I was hoping that we would come around to, and we have, come around to a point where all of us, not one of us, knows when that time is up on this earth plane. We don't know.
No, we don't.
And so really, in many ways, we are living a near-death experience every moment.
Mm-hmm.
We may not be going through tunnels and seeing lights and talking
mm-hmm.
to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
but we, you know, we really are back to that idea that Eckhart Tolle's wonderful book, The Power of Now, talks about, that now is what we have.
Yeah.
This moment is what we have.
And I truly believe that if we work on raising our intuition and walking our spiritual journey, that we all will experience the wonderful after effects that NDEs experience without having to die to get there.
I agree. Absolutely, we will.
So,
wow.
Thanks for listening to this, because hopefully that's a part of your path.
I hope so, too. Thank you all so much for being with us. I just, real quickly, reminder of our Psychic Teachers Book Club, which airs live tomorrow morning on Blog Talk as well. So please come visit with me. Samantha's not going to be with me tomorrow, and I got a bunch of books I'm going to talk about and kind of get you started on. But we thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, and if everyone could just say prayers for Deb, because her show opens this week.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Thank you.
Break a leg, Deb.
Thank you, Samantha. So everyone have a wonderful week and be the light.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.